Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, I am chatting with Mike Larson. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Real Mike Larson. He also writes the Safe Money Report. And Mike, let's cover again what the Fed had to say this week. The Fed, again, did not raise or did not cut interest rates, but they did lower some of their inflation forecasts, and they removed that patient word from their overall statement. What were some of the main takeaways that you had from the Fed, which seems to be turning even more dovish now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think what's happened here is that, you know, the Fed cycle, you can kind of stick a fork in it. It died on December 2018. You know, after 3 years of raising interest rates, this whole process began in December 2015. You know, we got up about 250 basis points by December, or excuse me, 225 basis points by December of this previous year. And then that was the end. And what's noteworthy about the cycle already being over in terms of rising interest rates are a couple of things. Number one, the amount of time that rates were at zero, or basically, you know, at their nadir before the cycle of hikes began, was the longest in history at 84 months, I think it came to. The amount of time it took to raise rates was a very extended cycle, about 3 years, which is much longer than usual. And yet, despite all that, the amount that they were finally able to get into sort of in the reserve in terms of raising interest rates off zero at 225 basis points is a lot less than they've done in past hiking cycles. So what does that mean in English? It means the Fed is heading into, in my opinion, a likely recession next year, given a lot of the indicators that I'm following, with very little ammunition to fight it. You know, we're only 225 basis points off zero at this point when it comes to interest rates. And what's very noteworthy about what the Fed did this week, or admitted this week, is that even they don't think their stuff's going to work. And by that, or the evidence I would cite, is the fact that they slashed in that sort of like future projections of what's going to happen next year and the year after that, and then also the long term. They basically slashed their long-term inflation expectations to the lowest level since they rolled this whole forecasting business out. And that comes on the heels of a number from the University of Michigan, a sentiment survey recently, that said consumers had the lowest expectation for future inflation than they've ever had in the, I think, three or four decades that survey's been going on. What does that tell you? Well, it's that we're sort of in the same boat, just to, you know, at an earlier point in it, we're sort of on the same cruise that Japan and Europe have already been on for a long time. I mean, you look at what's going on in Japan and Europe. You know, they've had 0% or negative interest rates for literally years. It's not some new policy that we're rolling out in terms of low interest rates. They've been doing it for years and years. They've been doing massive QE for years and years, but it's not working. Draghi just came out earlier this week and said, we might need to do more stimulus. What does that tell you? It tells you that stimulus is not actually stimulus. It's not working. Whether you talk about working, whether you define working as being pushing inflation up or pushing growth up. It's just not working. And that's what the Fed kind of admitted this week. So what that sort of does in terms of what it means for investors, you can look at the market and it's sort of sniffing this out, right? Bond prices have been going up and bond yields have been going down, you know, in the treasury sector. I mean, we've had a very big rally in terms of bond prices. And that's people just saying, look, I'm not worried that the Fed is going to succeed. The Fed is not going to succeed in reflating. That's what the bond market's telling you. Where else you're seeing that is that in the stock market. I mean, which kinds of stocks have been leading for the last 12 to 18 months? It hasn't been the growthier type stuff that does really well in a gangbusters economy. It's been utilities. It's been REITs. It's been consumer staples. You know, I joke that my sort of investing motto has been for a long time now, boring is good. It's not greed is good. Boring is good, because the boring stuff is what's actually making a lot more money than the stuff that they talk about on TV all the time. I mean, recently the utilities ETF was up something like 27% in the last 12 months, which is almost quadruple the return from technology. And yet technology you hear about every day. So I think until you sort of get, you know, more champions of those boring sectors, and I'm not the only one waving the boring flag, I think you can continue to stick with that. I think in the Fed admitting that reflation is going to fail, even though they won't come out and say that, that's another thing that I think is ultimately somewhat bearish for growth equities, and, you know, economically sensitive groups. It's especially bearish for things like financials, which need higher rates and a fatter yield curve to profit. It's probably pretty bullish for bonds, and it's ultra bullish, in my opinion, for gold. I mean, gold's been one of my favorite sectors for about 8 to 12 months now, gold and its derivatives, gold stocks and so on. And I think that with, you know, this latest news and sort of expectations now, the Fed's going to be cutting interest rates before very long. What does that tell you? Well, we're probably going to be heading back towards zero here in the U.S. And, you know, what beats a 0%, or, you know, especially with negative yields overseas, gold, even with a 0% yield, looks much more attractive. So I think that gold is, again, probably one of my favorite investments here. Has been, and even more so, that sentiment's been reinforced by what the Fed did this week.
Okay. Yeah, hey, I know what you mean. Gold does benefit from low interest rate environments, and it's not out of the question to one day maybe see U.S. interest rates also in negative territory like we have seen over in Europe. But that whole comment about the Fed not being able to get inflation on track or garner any inflation, does it really just come down to the fact that the economy in the U.S. and around the world simply needs another sort of recession, some deflationary event to almost hit the reset button?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. You know, when I say there's no inflation, well, look, I mean, obviously my bills are going up and the things that I need to buy, whether it's healthcare or, you know, other people with college expenses and things, you know, there is inflation in some of the things we need. But in terms of getting that broad base, sort of hitting that inflation target that they always want, they're continuing to fail. And I think that, you know, some of it's demographic, that, you know, aging populations, you know, that's sort of, is, in my opinion, some of a deflationary impact. The other thing is just that cheap money is the wrong solution for this problem. I mean, you know, frankly, it shouldn't even be called a problem, but if that's their goal is to get that, you know, hit that miraculous 2% number and continue to hit it till kingdom come. You know, the fact that policy of what they've been doing has not worked for years overseas and increasingly here, tells you something. The policies, you know, the cure or the medicine, whatever you want to call it, doesn't work for the disease that they're trying to treat. So, you sum it all up. And I think that, again, yes, I think we have what we've been seeing is instead of getting real world inflation, you know, sort of your CPI inflation, you're getting massive asset inflation. You end up with bubbles, stocks or housing or, you know, junk bonds, collectibles, all that kind of stuff we've talked about before. That's where the money's getting diverted to, unproductive investment. You know, why do you think you have so many companies that have been losing money for years and years, and yet they're valued in the tens of billions of dollars? When you're looking like Silicon Valley, for example, it's because there's free money that's being diverted into assets. So that's an unfortunate reality. It is what it is. Just as an investor, what you have to do is protect yourself and try and profit from it. And that's, you know, that's what you've been able to do by focusing on these boring type names, because that's what's working. And that's what I think continues to work along with gold in this kind of interest rate environment.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. Plus, one other thing to consider is that there has been a lot of money made in financial assets, and not unexpected to see some of that money go into these safer assets to preserve some of that wealth and the relative undervalued nature that we have seen gold. I just want another comment, though, regarding these rate cycles, whether it was cutting or hiking cycles. The Fed went about it in a very slow manner. You even said just a three-year process of hiking rates, and they didn't even get it up to 3%. They didn't even really get close to 3%. Do you think that we could be seeing in this next cutting cycle that the Fed will embark on probably this year, that they're going to stick to this slow, methodical approach, or are they going to tinker with it and instead of a quarter point, maybe go half a point, anything bigger than what they have been doing?
You know, what we've seen, and especially in the last couple of cycles, which were hugely, were hugely influenced by what was happening in asset prices, obviously tech stocks in the late 90s and then housing in the mid 2000s, is that they do stair step on the way up and then you kind of take the elevator on the way down. So yeah, if we get a market panic, I mean, they're not going to do it if the stock market and sort of credit markets are sitting there benignly just marking time. But, you know, if we have one of these down 500 or 700 point days in the Dow because of who knows what, you know, if we start to have more problems in the credit markets, then yeah, you're going to get these chunk interest rate cuts. It's not going to be 25 basis points at a time. It's going to be 50, and it's going to, you know, you end up with all these other things that can happen, these sort of intermeeting cuts. I mean, in the last down cycle for rates, I mean, rates fell hard and fast, and there was 50 basis point cuts in between scheduled meetings because the stock market was panicking. You know, I don't know if or when that's going to happen, but if it does, you can bet the Fed can get in there and start to get aggressive. My point has always been, you know, there's so much bad information about the Fed. People were probably in diapers the last time the Fed was in a, you know, a true rate cutting cycle, or especially in the early 2000s when they were cutting. The reality is, you know, interest rate cuts are very short term bullish. You'll see the stock market rally, but in the last couple of cycles, they've been long term bearish. I mean, you ended up, for example, the number one and number three biggest one day percentage gain for the NASDAQ composite The number one gain was December of 2000. The number two gain was in January of 2001. That in 2000, that was when Greenspan hinted that they were going to cut rates. And in January is when they actually cut rates. You got a 10% plus one day rally in the NASDAQ. And what happened over the next couple of years? It lost 80% of its value. So, you know, again, it's not that rate cuts are long-term bullish. I don't believe they are. And it's not really just what I believe. It's what the data actually shows. The only recent exception was 94 and 95. So I think, you know, even if the Fed's cutting, until you get towards the end of the cutting cycle, you don't want to really be chasing markets on it. You want to be still playing defense. And I think that's, again, that's what the market's telling you. That's why the defensive stuff is working. And I think it's going to continue to work.
So what about one step further, too, besides just rate cuts, any potential of a QE program? They're not really talking about it. The Fed is not talking about it, but that is kind of their other bullet in their chamber that they seem to like to use.
Look, again, I mean, if we're heading into recession, if you start getting really lousy jobs reports, negative prints, GDP numbers start stinking up the joint or ISM numbers, manufacturing and other stuff really take it down to a turn for the worse. Sure, that's going to be a pocketbook they reach into or whatever. I don't think it's anytime soon, certainly, but, you know, and I think they will cut rates first. But, you know, it won't matter that there's obvious evidence, empirical evidence that it doesn't work. They have to look like they're doing something once people start panicking. So, sure, you know, they're going to kind of throw all the spaghetti at the wall and see what happens. I mean, isn't that the lesson of Europe and Japan? I mean, they've been throwing monetary spaghetti at the wall for decades. In the case of Japan and for many years in Europe, and just because it doesn't work doesn't mean they stop serving it up.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. These central banks continue to read off the same playbook, and well, now they've just gotten us into a situation where they're already in ultra low interest rates, and now economies are starting or have been showing some weakness for a while, and it's trickling now into the U.S. with a lot of this mixed data, and I think the more important trend of the data being more negative than anything. So, hey, the
yeah, yeah, absolutely, spot. Absolutely. I mean, again, you know, the point is you have to look like you're doing something, even if investors kind of don't expect it to work, and I think that's. You know, that's why the market's doing what it's doing. You know, that's why bonds have been rallying nonstop for a year. That's why gold's been rallying. That's why, volatility, even though earlier this week it was down a little bit, you're still seeing volatility that's been gradually climbing ever since January 2018. All those things added together tell you that the market's concerned that the cycle is turning and that recession's coming. And that's why, you know, again, you're getting into somewhat of a more defensive positioning, and you have been for more than a year now.
Yeah. All right. Well, one final comment in terms of how you're playing this potential increase in gold. What are your favorite vehicles, and do you actually drive down into some of the equities, the stocks?
You know, again, I think owning physical gold or GLD, depending, on the size of your portfolio. I mean, I think the larger dollar amounts you're trying to invest in gold, the more you want to have some actual bullion, coins, things like that, versus just paper gold like GLD. If it's smaller amounts of money you're investing, I think that's a perfectly fine vehicle. I actually just added a position in GLD in the safe money report that I edit. I had already had Wheaton Precious Metals as WPM as a company, a gold streaming company. I've had that in there for a little while, and it's moving nicely in the direction I was hoping for. So yeah, those are a couple, you know, gold itself. And then Wheaton is one of my favorite names in the sector. And I think that, again, you want to be just adding more exposure to that, to both miners and the metal as we head into the end of 2019 and beyond.
All right, Mike, great having you on the show. I appreciate all of your comments. It is an interesting week to see what the Fed did. And you know what? It fell in line with what the markets are forcing the Fed to do. But now it's just another story of another dovish central bank. And this time it's the Fed going down the road of all the other central banks. Mike, great chatting with you. Thanks for your time this weekend.
Thank you.